Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the Refractive Thinker Radio Show, hosted by the award-winning and international best-selling author Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur. Meet the scholars of the award-winning doctoral anthology series, The Refractive Thinker, where we focus on getting doctoral research off the coffee table and into the hands of business owners who can benefit from the results. Join us each Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time for 30 minutes of thought-provoking radio designed to discuss emerging topics in higher education and business. We will meet today's industry thought leaders and college professors leading the way. Details can be found at www.refractivethinker.com. Now, here's your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz.
Good morning, everyone, and happy December 1st and happy Tuesday morning. It's 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. This is your host, Dr. Cheryl Lentz, the academic entrepreneur, and welcome. We have an interesting topic to talk about today. It's the paradox of popularity versus profitability. Obviously, we have all heard the infamous something your mom or dad would say growing up as a result of peer pressure. If your friends all walked off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you follow right behind them? And while we all chuckle at the memory, it is an interesting dichotomy when we look at the idea of this paradox in business. Because there are many that believe, simply because of the popularity, in the correctness, in the appropriateness, in the popular vote of people to influence buying habits. I mean, do we look at the ability of why so much an item is so popular, particularly this time of year, that we buy it simply because others do? Or do we buy it because there's merit? I'm always amazed when I watch TV commercials that they said, well, 13 million people can't be wrong. Really? Are you sure about that? Because the idea of popularity versus profitability is very interesting because of this group dynamic. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is an item popular because it's good, it's wonderful, it's the hot toy of the season? I grew up working at my very first job with the idea of Cabbage Patch dolls. And I worked at Child World, I think it was. And it was amazing, the craziness that people would come into the store looking for that one item that Christmas. And believe it or not, they trashed the store. There were so many people that were coming in and just such in a haste. Think of Black Friday and the mob scene at some stores that they get there at 4 a.m. just so they can be the first one and to ensure that they get the hot toy. Now, is the hot toy because it's the hot toy? Or is it the hot toy because everybody really does like it? It's functional. It's productive. It meets the purpose. Or is it simply because everybody just decided that this was going to be it? I don't know. It's an interesting dynamic because I know every marketer in the country would love to know what's the hot toy. How do they position it so they can make money based on popularity or prudence? Popularity or function? When we look at the idea of what is a must-have, and why do we have things? Or do we have things because we like them? Or do we like things because we have them? Or we like things because others like them? And again, we're dealing with this idea of peer pressure, but on a much larger scale, particularly now with the advent of social media. I mean, I found myself Black Friday, Cyber Monday, looking at reviews that influenced purchases from people I didn't even know. I'm like, isn't that interesting? Because typically, you know, if we're looking for a mechanic to fix our car, I'm not willing to simply roll the dice. And I've had a few mechanics that are lousy, and it's taken them multiple times to fix my car, and I will never use them again. So I'm looking for people who've had good experiences, or bad, but typically I will talk to somebody I trust, my cousin, my friend, my dad, a colleague. Somebody I know who've had actual experience because I trust who I know, and therefore, by extension, I trust their opinion. And so we look at this dichotomy of, well, popularity is the mechanic, is the restaurant, is the toy popular because we really do like it, and we like it because others like it. Or in the business of profitability, many marketers would say, Doxy, I don't care. So long as they like it and they buy it, I'm good. The question becomes, how do we embrace this idea of popularity? There are interesting opportunities of people like something only because it was a hot toy, only to come across that there was something wrong with it. I recall some Barbie toys from years ago that had lead paint. Years ago, there was an attempt, parents, to try and find a lead-free, toy, paint-free, China-free Christmas, particularly in toys. And it was very, very difficult because people didn't realize how much of the American merchandising, how much of the popularity of products weren't available in the United States. And so whether a parent wanted a toy that was made in the United States, wanted a toy that wasn't made in China, they had a heck of a time trying to find it. And I still believe that's still the case. So the question is paradox of, do we really research what we want and do we really believe what we're told? Think of the idea of commercials. Commercials are influencing our buying papers, shaping popularity, shaping the conversation, shaping the ability to look at what might be popular. The question is, are they true? I've known lots of folks that have bought things because of the hype, because of the promise, because of the solution that a product or service offered, only to be disappointed when they actually bought said product or service. And that's where we go back to the paradox between popularity and profitability. It's because we're looking at the ideas, just because 13 million people said it was the right thing to do, well, if 12.5 million of those people return everything after the holidays, is that really profitability? And so it was very interesting of focusing on mass acceptance, mass marketing, the social media, the influence that we're influenced by people we've not even met. And so when I look at these reviews, whether it's a book, I remember a particular series I'm very fond of, I've been reading since high school, by W.E. Griffin, and I was going to buy the latest book in the series, and I was really shocked when I looked at this core group of very loyal friends, very loyal patrons, very loyal fans of being able to look at this particular author, myself included. And for whatever reason, as I was buying the next ones in the series, because I hadn't read the series in a while, so I bought all of it, I neglected to buy the last book. And the reason for that is the last book was not given favorable reviews at all. Matter of fact, it was lamented by most of their fans of how disappointed they were in the author's writing, and it wasn't up to the caliber, and it was a co-author with someone else, which wasn't just a author by W.E. Griffin. It was a co-author, and even the author apologized for the lack of quality. It was a very short book. It didn't have the personality and the writing quality and just the whole patterns that we were convinced, particularly if you become a fan of a particular author. And I always thought that was interesting that, again, I'm looking at loyal fans. I'm identifying with them, even though I've not met any of them personally. And yet I was influenced and ended up not buying the book. And it seems that I may have dodged a bullet, so to speak, simply because I didn't want to be disappointed based on what I was already hearing. I remember my students saved me from the Vista debacle years ago when they had the new operating system from Vista, that because of my students and everybody just seemingly complaining, I simply bypassed it and waited for the new version to come out. And so we look at the idea, I'm sure we've heard this, the first adopters, the person who stands in line for 24 hours because a new iPhone came out. A new iPad, a new technology, what was it, the Fitbit watch, and others that I've got to be the first to have it. Doesn't matter if it's a $10,000, I'm going to be the first one because I'm an early adopter and I've got to have the latest and greatest regardless of price. I'm a bit more of a let's see the first thing that comes out, and I'm more of a maybe a second group adopters. Maybe I want to be able to see what's out there, see what the lay of the land is, see what people are thinking about things before I'm going to jump on the bandwagon. Again, I'm not into the popularity or the influence simply because a company has had great success with a prior product, a prior series, a prior influence. For example, if you're reading a series like I was just explaining in there and you loved all 12 books but no one liked the 13th one, what do they like to say is that a past performance is not indicative of future success. There's no guarantee. Now, ideally, we like TV shows, we like authors, we like brands, but not everything always meets our expectations because of prior performance and prior history. And so the popularity of the Apple brand is a great example. We look at the ideas that when Steve Jobs was heading the company, there was a lot of innovation, a lot of firsts, a lot of unique things that the market hadn't had before. With his passing, with his removal from the board, and no longer being part of that dynamic, Apple shifted a little bit. And there's a lot of debate in the marketplace on whether or not Apple's popularity has sustained itself or whether it's merely resting on its laurels because of prior performance. And so our company's taken advantage of the popularity of what they've had in the past versus the profitability of what is in the present or what could be in the future. So there's great distraction. And remember, from a leadership standpoint, which is really our focus here, you really only have three options: lead, follow, or get out of the way. And so if you're a leader of the marketplace and you are shaping the conversation by suggesting that the iPhone 6 or this particular electronic is the wave and the newest, latest, and greatest, the Fitbit watch, does the hype match the actual product performance? The idea is that praxis, that nexus, that coming together of when the commercial actually meets the expectations and the product matches what we believe it's supposed to do based on what we've been told by either others or the marketing concept. I remember a movie, and I wish I could tell you where it was from, of what the idea, I think it was the American President, where Annette Bening says, the public will think what I tell them to think. And I still recall it going, wow, isn't that amazing? And how marketers can shape the conversation to influence the public. And there is that another paradox that if it's written down, if someone has told it, if I've heard it enough times, well, then of course it must be true. We all know that we are influenced by that, but we have to be careful because no, it's not true. Just because you hear somebody saying something a million times does not make it any more true if it's a lie. But many people believe they've seen it on the internet, they've seen it in an advertisement, they've heard it on the radio. And so as this hype grows, we actually start to believe, well, of course, they wouldn't put it on TV if it weren't true. They wouldn't put it on the internet. And so much of our thinking has been abdicated by letting others think for us. So when you've heard something on the news, do you automatically assume, well, because Channel 7 or Fox News or CNN or MSNBC said it, that simply it must be true? And the more you hear it, the more you have that reinterpretation and that reinforcement saying, absolutely. I prefer to follow Ronald Reagan in the sense of trust but verify. I'll take your opinion, I'll add it to my own, and I'm going to do my own research. I'm going to go try the product. I'm going to look at the research. I'm going to look at the idea of consensus, 100% acceptance is typically what consensus means, versus majority rule. I mean, if you look at reviews and you see, you know, say there's 1,000 reviews and 990 of them are favorable, interesting. If you have 990 that are unfavorable, interesting. The question becomes, are these true reviews or the paradox of popularity? Do we look at the fact that few people have the confidence to stand alone and stand for what they believe in? Because it's easier to be part of the crowd. We want to be in that in-group. We want to be in the popular group. We want to be on the bandwagon that we have the latest and greatest. And I'm always amazed when I go to meetings and we look at the idea of popularity, what people compare. And I did it myself just this past Thanksgiving. A friend of mine, her son works for Verizon, so I was kind of picking his brain because I need a new phone. I'm with Verizon, but I didn't do well in the research of the phone I currently have. There's been a lot of problems with it. I've had it replaced 3 times. I've had the Android DNA or something like that. And while I like the Android product versus the iPhone, that's personal preference, that I'm a little cautious now, and I should have had my phone replaced months ago because of its lack of functionality, its errors, and the fact that the SIM card and all this other stuff has been on there. But it was seemingly popular at the time that it was purchased, and 2 out of 3 people loved it. I had one of those, but I had problems with it. And so now I'm looking at I'm more cautious because I've had a bad experience. I don't want to screw up a second time by having a phone based on popularity, particularly since there's so many out there. And so my goal was in talking to my friend's son of going, well, what do you like? You're an insider. You're a techie. You're a person who compares and tests phones and things. What do you like and why? And it's the and why part that's very important. So the idea of profits can be fleeting. Profits can be, again, everybody buys the toy, puts it under the tree, and then Christmas morning it breaks. Or Christmas morning the hype isn't really as true to the hype as the commercials and everybody in the buzz when you actually play with it. And so to me, the proof is in the action and the behavior and the do we really believe the hype and the buzz? And is there profit in that? Well, there might be initially, but think about it as the hottest toy for Cabbage Patch dolls. I mean, oh my gosh, the craze is still available, not as crazy as it once was back in the 80s, but it's still consistent. And now you have a product that's still on the shelves. Think about those products. They're going to be the hype for the hottest toy that nobody can get this Christmas. And I don't have children, so I'm not sure what that product is. But will they actually like it, or will there be a lot of returns the day after Christmas? Because profits are interesting when you're counting them now, but because it's such a return policy, it could be a month or more, depending on the return policies of specific stores, that they're counting their profits far more effectively than waiting for the returns to come back after Christmas. It's one thing to sell something. It's one thing to have that sales stick. And so, again, this paradox of popularity versus profitability. And the idea is we want to be able to look at who we follow. And this really comes down to a leadership issue. Do we lead? Are we an early adopter? Do we believe that if we've had success in the product before, if 13 million people have done this, that that's our test to be able to suggest that popularity is going to influence? I will admit that there have been some products that I have not purchased because of negative reviews. And I wonder at the authenticity, at the accuracy, but it was enough to put a shadow of a doubt, a reasonable doubt. If this many people are not happy, and they've been very specific, my students will appreciate this. It's not what we know, it's what we can prove. So if you just don't have this, well, I just didn't like it, it's not very helpful. If you tell us specifically why you didn't like it, it didn't fit, it was smaller than intended, the picture on the website was misleading, it didn't have the promise and the expectation of insert comments you heard online. And so when you're looking at product testers, like Consumer Reports is interesting. Are these consumers who are out in the world that are testing these products, but are they necessarily experts in their field? And does it matter if they are? Are you a user or are you an expert? Does making you an expert, or does you being a user make you an expert? Maybe. We live in the world of research. And again, it's not what I know, it's what I can prove. Prove to me why you had a bad experience. It wasn't worth the cost because I can buy something that's just as good for $10 cheaper that has the exact same function, even though it doesn't have a brand name, and that works for me. Or I was expecting to have... what was that one I read the other day? I was expecting that this product would have lasted the 3 months that they expected. It broke within 2 weeks. Okay, that's interesting. So everyone may have a different experience, but when we're looking at these reviews, when we're looking at the biggest hype and you're asking your children, your grandchildren what they want for Christmas, the question I would ask them is, why do you want that for Christmas? And I can hear the crickets chirping as we speak. I've asked this question in my class, and it doesn't matter, undergrad, master's, doctor, it doesn't matter. It's the human nature of going, well, why do we want what we want? And I've had some people, it's like, well, because everyone in my family wants one, and every kid at school has one, and if I have a, they have a cell phone, I have to have a cell phone. And if they have a this kind of car, I have to have a this kind of car. And I wondered, going, if they didn't tell you what they wanted, would you still want it? I lived in Las Vegas for 12 years. I was in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I was amazed at the narcissism, the greed, the financing a lifestyle. Again, we're back to the paradox of popularity versus profitability. And yet they've had one of the worst real estate crashes in the country because people bought homes without thinking of the downside. They bought interest-only loans for 3 and 4%, and when the market was humming along, things were fabulous. And now that the market has not quite recovered, particularly in Vegas, and the reason I know this is I have two homes that have not been able to sell at market value, or certainly not what we paid for them years ago, because the market hasn't quite recovered as it has in other places. And so I'm always cautious when I get these hype statements by various real estate folks and attorneys, and I'm thinking, prove it to me. Sell one of my homes, and oh, dare I say, sell it at a profit, I might just believe you. But when we're looking at so many people that gave their homes back because they didn't want the responsibility, they didn't hold up their end of the bargain, and those of us who did suffered. And so now we're looking at that paradox. Well, everybody was on the bandwagon because they were told, well, an interest-only loan is fabulous. You're just paying interest the first, 5 or 7 years anyway. What's the big deal? Well, the big deal is when you had a variable rate, and that variable rate shifted when the market shifted, a lot of people couldn't afford their mortgages anymore. And because they couldn't afford it, they cried foul. And was it, whose responsibility is it? If you sign your name on a contract, it's your responsibility to have said understanding on said contract. Many didn't. Many who could even afford it didn't want to be saddled with it, so instead of keeping their home, doing what their responsibility the contract said they were supposed to do, they short-sailed it. They gave it back. They foreclosed on it. And while they got off scot-free, at least some of them, those of us who hung on thinking that it was the ethical thing to do is to keep our homes, refinance them as appropriate, and to be able to sell them as our contract said it was. I made a deal. I signed the bottom line, said I was responsible, good, bad, or indifferent. A lot of people didn't honor their contracts. So now we're back to this idea, well, a lot of people mass exit or entered the market, and just as equally as rats leaving from a drowning ship, exited the market. And then there are those of us who, for moral reasons and business reasons, kept our end of the bargain, and now we have been inability to sell our homes at either a break-even or even a profit because of others who just decided it wasn't worth it. They gave their homes back, and they didn't care what it did to the rest of the marketplace. And then they were shocked when 1,000 people or 10,000 people or more behaved as they did, and they're like, gee, I wonder what happened to the market. It's like, really? So think about why we do what we do, because the idea of business is tied into the idea of leadership and the idea of thinking and critical thinking and refractive thinking and the ability to look at why do we do what we do, and does popularity make it better? Does it give us confidence that because the majority or 13 million people, I'll never forget that commercial, 13 million people can't be wrong. Really? Are we certain the fact that just because a lot of people have done something that there isn't the risk that a lot of people could be wrong? So I want to be able to make sure that we look at this idea of how do we move forward with looking at what the market is trying to tell us. Can we really go back to the psychology of simple prudence that our parents told us years ago? Well, just because your friends jumped off the Brooklyn Bridge, would you go with them? Just because someone ahead of us does this and we value their opinion, or we don't even know who they are, but yet their opinion is out there, we follow it just the same. I don't know. I know that it's amazing when you ask people why they do what they do and they can't answer, then that, to me, puts popularity into doubt. Because people are simply abdicating their thinking, following the crowd. They want one because everyone else has one, and they don't want to be the one without the chair when the music stops, so to speak. I'm not dismissing the potential helpfulness of popularity. I just want to make sure that it's an accurate representation of individuality. If you find that you want an iPhone because you value the quality of the iPhone, then by all means, capitalism allows you, so long as you have the money, you have the ability to spend it however you want. But when you spend it, take a look at the opportunity cost. We've talked about that before. It's the opportunity of spending your money in one place versus not spending it at all versus spending it in another. The question is, why? So as we go forth through this holiday season, just take a moment to look at what you're buying and why. What is the goal? Are you buying it because you really want it, because someone else really wants to have it, because there's a solution that it's offered, because it really does work and it does maintain the hype and the acid test and the ability to actually perform as advertised? Or do we really want something simply because others do, simply because there's this, well, 13 other million people, whether we know that's accurate or not, has had this, and I don't want to be left behind. Well, if they have it, it must be good, right? Does it have to be? How many people bought a lot of electronics along the way and it didn't match the hype and they returned it? How are we going to look at meeting what's called the psychological contract, the expectations that we have based on buying something, that we're entering a contract? I'm giving you my money for this product because it's supposed to do this person or this function. But I know a lot of women, for example, not to pick on us, but they will buy a designer bag or a designer coat or a designer label simply because they want people to know that they have good quality and good taste. Do you really need to have a Prada purse or a Prada pair of shoes that cost $800 when perhaps something equally less at $40, $400? I don't know what the answer is, but is it really a quality issue or is it a popularity because everyone has one and I want to have Jimmy Choo shoes or I want to have a Louis Vuitton bag or a Liz Claiborne purse because I don't want to be left behind and thought less of because of the perception of influence and the perception of what popularity has versus profitability. And so when I'm a business owner, I think a lot of it is sustained profitability. If there's a good enough quality product and there's a good enough quality company behind it, chances are that company's going to be around for a while, and now you're going to have a solid performer, above expectations performer, that matches the popularity, and that's why people are gravitating to it as opposed to not having something foundational, or in the academic world we call it substantive. So thank you for joining us this morning as we start to unveil some of these questions of human behavior regarding the paradox of popularity versus profitability. Why do we do what we do? Why do we buy what we buy? Why do we want what we want? And take a moment to be able to look at some of the motivations, some of the rationales, because it's a very interesting question about human behavior, whether we lead or whether we follow. So thank you for joining us this morning. I wish you the best as you look in the chaos now that we have Black Friday behind us and we have Cyber Monday behind us. I hope you got those wonderful deals that we're looking for. But I also want you to be a little bit of a skeptic. Be sure that whatever the popularity may be, that you don't abdicate your thinking, that you go and do your own research, do your own homework to make sure that whatever it is works for you. So thanks for joining us this week. My name is Dr. Cheryl Lentz. I'm known as the academic entrepreneur. And we will see you every Tuesday morning at 9 a.m. Mountain Standard Time. Until next time, keep thinking your way to success. Have a good week. Bye now.